So we are going to be reviewing part three of our FTC training. This one is going to be on deceptive advertising and unfair practices. Next week, we're going to be doing a hot seat. So we're going to be taking people's websites, people's funnels, and then basically tearing them up and down in terms of compliance and where there's potential issues. So if you're interested in that, reach out to me. Definitely, and we'll get you set up for next week. But Marty, I'll let you take the floor.
Okay. Well, good morning. Today, as Justin said, we're going to be talking about, we're always talking about deceptive practices when it comes to FTC, right? But we're going to focus today on various types and requirements of disclosures that FTC needs to be made and where they need you to make them and how you should say them. So it's going to be an interesting session today. And as Justin said, we really, really would love some of you to volunteer to sit in the hot seat so we can review your websites, your disclosures, your ads, your funnels, you know, whatever it is that you're willing to share with the group, give you an honest critique. And help you be more compliant. So let's jump into it. I have a bit of a presentation, as I always do. Let's see, where is it? There it is.
Don't ask me on how this, let's see if you share your screen with this thing.
Can you see my screen?
I got to turn it on. There we go. And then I think we should be good. Yep.
You can see it?
Yep.
Okay. So session three, and we're going to do a deep dive on the topic of disclosure and the implications it has for avoiding deceptive advertising or misleading advertising. And I'm going to say this at the beginning here. Every single thing you do to promote, market, generate traffic, leads, everything you do is considered advertising by the FTC. So a website, advertising. Ads, of course, advertising. Videos, advertising. UGC, advertising. Social media posts, advertising. Every single thing you do that implies getting someone to take an action, to buy something, come to your website, it's all advertising. So we're going to talk about disclosure today. And there are a number of really critical aspects that all tie together somehow. So you're going to see some overlap. And as we go through the different components, you're going to hear some of the same words over and over again. And you'll get the point that FTC is very tunnel visioned. FTC has blinders on. They only want one thing, and that is protect consumers. So to ensure transparency, FTC acts and monitors to prevent deception. And this is based on FTC's legal mandate, and they are a law enforcement agency, so never forget that consumers become fully informed about any potential relationship that might exist that could bias a review. So if I have a product that I'm marketing and I pay Justin $500 to do a UGC and talk about how great my product is, well, obviously he's getting compensated for saying nice things. If I pay him $500, he's not going to say this product stinks. So any relationship that could potentially bias a review or a testimonial must be disclosed to the reader or the viewer or the listener. And again, the purpose of this is only to make sure that consumers are informed and not misled in their purchasing decisions. So one of the key aspects to remember is transparency. When you write something, when you create an ad, when your agency sends you ads to approve, you ask yourself, are we being transparent? Am I being transparent? Is this ad being transparent that there is some kind of relationship with whoever is endorsing or promoting or giving a testimonial or reviewing the product? And transparency means revealing any kind of what FTC calls a material connection. And a material connection means that the other party, the party who's saying the nice things, has an incentive to say those nice things. So it has to be disclosed to consumers if you give, I'm going to just use reviewers, if you give reviewers any kind of payment at all, you give them free product, you give them discounts, they're somehow employed or on a contract or a retainer with you, you share revenue, like an affiliate, right? Or any kind of mutual business interest, you're going to give them a percentage of your company when it goes public. Any kind of incentive at all must be disclosed. Mm-hmm. The next part is pretty obvious. It's consumer protection, right? That's what FTC is all about. But this phrase, clear and conspicuous, has a lot of depth to it. So FTC's guidelines are intended to prevent misleading advertising, right? Remember, advertising means everything. So if you say something on a website that isn't properly disclosed, FTC says you are misleading consumers. You can be misleading them intentionally and blatantly by saying something, or you can mislead consumers by omission. And that's what this part is all about. Disclosure eliminates the risk of misleading a consumer by omission, by not telling them that the reviewer is getting paid. So clear and conspicuous drives every single phase in the topic of disclosure. There's another reason. In addition to protecting consumers, FTC's second parallel mandate is to protect marketplace competition. So they're not only protecting consumers, they're also protecting the businesses, the brands, the advertisers, the marketers, by ensuring that all the entities engage in ethical marketing. So companies become encouraged and enforced against, if they don't, to compete fairly. So no one is allowed to cheat. No one is allowed to not disclose. And so if everybody discloses and all your competitors disclose and you disclose and all the disclosures are proper, then it's a level playing field. Then it comes down to strategies, positioning, pricing, offers, how good your product is. But at least you're disclosing fairly. And it's all about informed decision making. FTC wants you, and I'm going to clarify wants you just in a minute. The FTC wants you to ensure that consumers make informed buying decisions based on both context and if there are any potential biases. So if a consumer knows that a particular list of, from a review site, top 10 cameras of 2024, if there are affiliate links in there, then the reviewer has an incentive to put those links up. Well, the consumer should know that. Further, if one of those camera companies pays a much higher commission than the others, well, maybe the reviewer puts that one at the top of the list or has a better review. So consumers need to know this because it can flavor their decision. Mm-hmm. Avoidance of deception is pretty easy. It means you have clear and uniform standards that you follow. So it prevents a situation where a consumer might be misled. And, you know, this is very interesting because marketers generally want to minimize screaming that we're paying for this review, right? So, you know, hashtag sponsored is a very frequent way that advertisers, you know, disclose. And while it is legal, the FTC frowns on it, and it's very, very likely that in the near future, they won't allow it to be considered a complete, clear, and conspicuous disclosure. Because what does sponsored mean? Does sponsored mean that my brand paid you to do this? Does it mean that I'm giving you an affiliate commission? Does it mean that I've hired you? Because the level of relationship can impact the decision-making of a consumer. You know, many years ago, I come from the big agency world in New York many years ago, as you may know. There was a brand called the Hair Club for Men.
Yeah. Did you ever use that product?
No, I never did. See?
I was going to say.
But anyway, the ad was talking head of the president of the company, the owner of the company. And he went on, he said, oh, blah, 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 this and that, and the Hair Club for Men. And at the end, he said, why would I lie to you? I own the company. Huh? Get the point? So the level of relationship influences consumer decisions. So please be very, very careful. Here's a new word for you that I venture to guess most of you have never had used. Clarity and conspicuity. Disclosures must be both clear, and clear has many dimensions to it, and conspicuous, and that has many dimensions to it. And it must be clear and conspicuous because FTC wants the consumer to see it, to notice it, to understand it, and to act upon it appropriately, quickly. So this means using plain language and always presenting the disclosure as prominently as possible so it cannot be missed. So for example, let's suppose you're using a hashtag to disclose. You cannot bury that hashtag in a list of six other hashtags. That's a violation. It has to be basically the first one. So that consumers who don't want to spend all their time reading everything, they can't miss it. You can't bury it at the bottom. You can't hide it at the end. FTC needs disclosures to be clear and conspicuous. They also need to be appropriate to the mode of communications being used. So the channel on which this piece of advertising is being placed, website, social media, UGC, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, doesn't matter. Each of these channels offers different opportunities to disclose. So for example, disclosures in a video, let's say you're placing a video on YouTube, the disclosure needs to be in the video itself. It can't just be, you know, in the description. It can't just be in a headline above the video. It has to be in the video and not simply adjacent to it. So on YouTube, the disclosure should be in the video, so people who don't want to read can see it blatantly. Mm-hmm. And for people who may be hearing impaired and couldn't really hear a disclosure, it's got to be big and prominent. There's more, we'll come to that. There's also the factor of timeliness. And timeliness doesn't mean, you know, don't be late to my party. Timeless means at the same time the review is seen. Because the FTC wants to ensure that this consumer, this prospect, this customer, this potential client sees the disclosure that might affect their buying decision either immediately before they see the promotion, the advertising, or at the same time. So time is of the essence, and the FTC not only issues regulations, they issue what they call guidance. Guidance doesn't really have the weight of law, and you don't have to follow the guidance. But wink, wink, yeah, you do. Because if FTC has any issue with what you're advertising for a real violation, they're also going to see that you didn't follow proper guidance. And that's going to hurt. It makes their case against you stronger and more aggressive. By the way, FTC does not lose. You do not want to get an enforcement action from the Federal Trade Commission. It's a nightmare. It's costly. As we talked about in the last session, you could be fined $50,000 per violation per day. So let's think about this for a minute. You have a website and you've put consumer reviews all over your websites on the homepage. They're on a review page. They're on a CR, you know, what our customers say page. They're on your PDPs. They're all over the place. Well, if there is a disclosure that needs to be made, it needs to be made on every single page. So if you have a violation and you have consumer reviews on 10 different pages, right? 10 times 50,000, that's $500,000 a day in fines. This is why it's so important to not piss the FTC off and to not deceive or mislead consumers. So if you have a disclosure, put it at the top, put it up front, say it, present it in advance so there's no confusion. Well, let's just review the critical elements very quickly. Transparency, you must disclose. Consumer protection, you must tell them what it is, what the disclosure is trying to say to them, that we're paying this person to say nice things. It has to be fair. It has to be ethical so that your competitors don't have a leg up on you. Everybody has to disclose. So there's a level playing field, right? Consumers need to be able to make better and more informed buying decisions. So if someone's getting paid to say something nice, as a consumer, I want to know that. You know, if you look at Amazon, find a product on Amazon that has a lot of reviews and go there, and you'll see that Amazon clearly says, right next to the person's name, or their Amazon name, verified customer, verified purchaser. Okay, now I as a consumer say, that person actually bought the product. And Amazon is confirming this. Now, if Amazon was just putting that up without actually confirming that that person is a verified purchaser, then that would be a major violation. Think about the fines for Amazon, right? Facebook for privacy violations was fined, what was it, Jay? $5 billion.
Something like that. It was crazy.
Okay. So they're not messing around. You need to avoid deception. So don't try to hide the weenie. Clarity, conspicuity, it has to be clear, easily to understand. Has to be clear and easy to understand. It also has to be conspicuous. One of the reasons why it needs to be super clear and super conspicuous is the FTC knows that there's a lot of noise out there. How many ads do you see a day? How many ads are on Facebook in your feed? There's noise. There's a lot of competition. Consumers they don't have the time to really stop and read every single word. That's why disruptive advertising works, right? So you need to be very clear. It's got to be easy to see, fast to read. Contextual relevance. So if it's a video, you need to be in the video and in the written context next to it. And if it's just a static ad, we're going to get to this in a minute, you need to place it in certain ways to be visible. Mm-hmm. Timeliness, you can't bury it. So I've seen a lot of websites, and you know, I've consulted to a lot of companies, where I'll go to the website and there's something that needs to be disclosed. And I'll say, well, you know, you need to disclose this. And the website owner will say, yeah, it's in my privacy policy, it's in my terms and conditions. Or there's a little footer link at the bottom that says disclosures. Well, you know what? That's not acceptable. You cannot take a disclosure, put it in another page someplace with a little link, and think you are safe. That's not a get-out-of-jail-free card. It doesn't give you any level of protection. None. You must disclose on the page conspicuously and contiguously to whatever the advertisement is. It has to be right there. You can't hide it in a link. You can't ask the consumer to have to click something to see the disclosure. So let's jump into some different types of ads and some implications of disclosure for those types of ads. Let's start with static ads. And you all know what static ads are. The disclosures have to be clear and conspicuous. We talked about that. But the FTC requires that they stand out from the background. So to the letter of the law, if your background is a dark blue, your disclosure can't be one shade of lighter blue. It doesn't stand out. The examples that FTC gives says use a complementary color. It really has to stand out. So it can't be hidden among other text. So you have a static ad and there's lots of words on the static ad, right? Approved by this, recommended by that organization, 100% organic, whatever it is, right? Recyclable. And then one of those little pieces of text is a piece of disclosure. Not allowed. It cannot be hidden in any way in other text or inside other visuals. Here's one that nobody does. The FTC requires, this is not guidance, this is a regulation, that the font and size of the font used should be as large as the font being used in the ad. Sure. It can't be just a tiny little thing over in the corner. Even if you put it in the right place on top, it can't be a tiny little, like, you know, mouse type. We already talked about contrast and color. Disclosures must be superimposed on an image. If the ad is nothing but a graphic, then obviously any disclosure has to be on the graphic. If the graphic is surrounded, let's say like a Facebook ad, with some copy at the top and some copy at the bottom, it must be disclosed there if it's not on the actual graphic. So you don't have to put it in both places, but it has to be right there for the consumer to see and for the consumer to not miss. That's the whole point of this. The consumer can't miss it. Let's talk a moment about social media placements. And by this, I mean Facebook, Instagram, X, YouTube, TikTok, etc. Disclosures must be straightforward on social media. And they must clearly identify the ad or the placement as a paid promotion immediately, because FTC recognizes the massive use, the massive traffic, the massive noise competition that you see on social media. And so they want you to be even more blatant, even more understandable in disclosures on social media. So they really have to be highly visible to break through that clutter. As I mentioned quickly before, disclosures cannot be obscured inside a list of hashtags. They're like a word cloud of hashtags. Can't be disclosed by saying, and to learn more, click here, right? It's got to be right there. The language has to be as simple as humanly possible. Paid placement. That's good enough. Sponsored product. That's good enough. But the deeper you can disclose, if you have the room to do it, and you're good with wordsmithing, the deeper disclosure is much more preferred by the FTC. So in video, ads, reviews, UGC, testimonials, you have to place the disclosure, this is direct language from FTC, where the reader's eyes or the viewer's eyes are most likely to be drawn to first. So if you open up a video and there's a lot of action at the bottom of that video and it grows and it grows and it grows, the viewer's eyes are first going to be drawn to the bottom of the video. That's where the disclosure has to be placed. And you have to superimpose or embed your disclosure directly on the video. So you can use a chyron, an overlay, a lower third. You can use in situ text where the text is actually embedded inside the graphic. And in video, the disclosure must be voiced as well at the beginning of the video. Video comes up. There's some start to the video and some text appears, and right above the video or inside the video, if it's video only, it says, you know, paid sponsorship. And then the talking head or the influencer has to say, I want to thank Acme for sending me this water bottle to review. I spent a couple of, you see that? The disclosure was made. Acme sent me this free water bottle to review. That disclosure was made. But it has to be both shown and voiced. And it has to stay up long enough for a viewer to read it completely, clearly, and not rush through it. It can't be like paid sponsorship. It should stay up for 4 to 5 seconds. And for videos that run longer than 2 minutes, you should repeat the disclosure approximately every 5 minutes or so. So you got a 20-minute VSL or affiliate influencer disclosure, you know, an unboxing, how do I use it, and it runs 10 minutes. You have to show that disclosure multiple times during the course of the video. So these are legally compliant, but please note that the longer ones, the more descriptive ones, are very strongly preferred. And by the way, as a marketing strategist, I will tell you that you should and can use disclosures that you're required to present for positive marketing benefit. You're not going to say, we bribed this influencer to say nice things about our product. The influencer can simply say, I want to thank Acme for sending me this free product to review, and go on. So, sponsored or hashtag sponsored, that's legally acceptable, but I don't think it's going to stay for very long. Hashtag ad, as well as hashtag sponsored, are typically platform provided, right? If you advertise on Facebook, it says sponsored. So the platform will provide certain notification to its viewers. That does not relieve you of the obligation to disclose. If it's a paid placement, if it's a paid sponsorship, if it's free product, just having the platform generated word sponsored on the top is not enough to keep you compliant. It'll keep you compliant with Facebook, not with the FTC. So I like things like, thanks to Acme for this free product. It's more personal, and consumers resonate better with it. It doesn't feel like a bribe. I've partnered with Acme to show you a new line of vitamins. Perfectly legal. You've disclosed this partnership. I want to thank the Justin Brenner Company for presenting me with this incredible statue. iPhone case, whatever it is. So you're indicating that the company gave it to the influencer for free. Paid partnership with Acme Bottle Company. And this is really, really important. It plays more so to tools like Instagram, who provide in-platform highlight tools, but you want to expand on it. You don't want your review to simply say, this is an ad. This was sponsored. That blatantly feels like you paid for it. But if the reviewer or the influencer goes on to say, you know, Acme Bottle Company sent this new metal water bottle to me for review, that's great. Consumers love that. It discloses, so you're compliant, and it leads into an intelligent and fair discussion. It lends credibility. Websites, landers, includes blogs, e-com sites and pages, PDPs, squeeze pages and funnels, affiliate sites, review sites, any kind of digital property that someone's going to go and read and click around. I want to warn you in advance that FTC takes a stronger legal approach to websites. And they're more stringent. And they have full-time staff that reviews websites that you click through to from ads on all the major platforms. So again, disclosures on websites need to be transparent. Can't hide them. Can't put them in mouse type. And they have to be immediately noticeable. You can't have a section on your page with customer reviews and then four more sections and then down at the bottom a little disclaimer. Not acceptable. They can't require a click. You cannot require a consumer to click something to read the full disclosure. You cannot require the consumer or place a disclosure in a hidden hover over or mouse over. Proximity matters to the FTC, so don't bury your disclosures. And full relevant disclosure is required. I'm going to give you a couple examples. So, affiliate links, sponsored content. Before an affiliate link, you know, up top in front of it, or before a review list, you know, go Google, best whatever, and you're going to see all these review sites dominating the SERP. So you're going to see, you know, 10 best, oh, we've reviewed this. And they're all getting paid an affiliate commission. And they all have some version of the following disclaimer. This post or this list or this review or our reviews contain affiliate links. And I may be compensated if you make a purchase by clicking one of our links. That's completely in-depth disclosure. It contains affiliate links. I may be compensated if you make a purchase after clicking the link. If you have a sidebar and you don't want to mess up the design of your web page, as long as it's really visible, or if you have a footer and you're not using mouse type like at the end of a car commercial on TV, a disclaimer like, some of the links on this website are affiliate links, meaning that at no additional cost to you, our website may earn a commission if you click through, make a purchase. This helps support our time, our efforts in reviewing these products for your benefit. You see where that goes? By talking it through and explaining it just a little bit more than saying, I'm getting paid, you engender confidence and trust in the consumer. And that's what this is all about, trustworthy. So affiliate links and sponsored content disclosures need to be, according to the FTC on a website, above the fold. And that's why putting them in footers, it's not a level A violation because you're not really hiding it if you disclose properly and you disclose in the right font size, for example. But the FTC wants it above the fold. Is that enough to get you in trouble if that's your only violation? Likely not. But to the letter of the law, it would. Your disclosures need to be adjacent to the claims. So whenever a product or a service is mentioned in a way that is beneficial to the brand, the disclosure has to be right there. And as I said earlier, if you have multiple pages that feature sponsored content, reviews, affiliate links, you have to include the disclosure on every page. Just having it on the homepage is not enough. This is one of my favorite topics. And out of the hundreds of websites that I've done, Justin's done, I don't know that we've seen very many that do this really, really perfectly to the letter. So there are many different types of customer reviews and testimonials. So let's take the first one. You get a review from an actual, real, verified customer that hasn't, and you haven't edited it. Justin wrote a review that says, I really love this water bottle when I go bicycling because it keeps my water cool for more than an hour. Okay. There's nothing in there that's illegal. It's a fair review. If we didn't compensate Justin for that review, we can place it all over our website and we don't need any disclosure at all. But again, purely from a strategic point of view, we have found value by disclosing that even when we don't have to disclose a material connection. All reviews are from verified purchasers only, and they've been published here without any modifications, without any edits, unedited. Oh, right, really? Because the consumer could be sitting there saying, well, did they edit this? Did they write this? Did they make it up? Did they cherry pick the best words? So by saying we didn't touch it, that gives even more confidence. Why wouldn't you want every extra ounce of marketing strength you can get? Another type is a real customer that you verified sends you a review, but the review contains an illegal statement or an illegal claim. Let's say, I'm going to pick on Justin again. Justin is a real customer of the Marty health supplement company, and he bought my health supplement for pain relief. And he sends me a review, and he says, wow, this product is incredible. I love it. Never going to be without it again. So far, all of that's good. He says, the arthritis pain I've been suffering from for the last 5 years is gone. That's not a legal statement according to the FDA. Because curing, removing, treating a disease, arthritis is a disease, is illegal for a non-prescription product. So I get the review, but the first part of that review is so powerful. I want to use it. So I can go in as the website owner or the brand or even the agency, and I can edit the review. But you have to disclose that. Consumer reviews, or these reviews, are from real consumers, from verified consumers, but they may be edited for clarity, brevity, or language, or format. If you have a reasonable and legitimate reason to edit a review, but maintaining the initial sentiment that the reviewer put in. Justin loves my supplement. He's never going to be without it. He feels great. Awesome. That I'm going to leave. Take out the part about the arthritis. Again, this gives confidence and it allows you to edit a review. Then there are reviews and testimonials that come from what I'll call non-verified customers. These may be real customers that you didn't verify before you placed the review. And there's a little bit of skepticism on the FTC's part. You didn't validate that this was a customer, but you're putting their review on your website, on your PDP. You're putting their little video testimonial right up front and center, but you haven't confirmed that they're actually really a customer. And the classic example is I'll get a message from one of my good friends. Hey, I just published this book on Amazon, and I need to get reviews. So can you give me a 5-star review, please, so I can tweak the algorithm a little bit, right? And so all the friends go to Amazon. They give a 5-star review. They haven't even read the book. They haven't bought the book. Well, maybe they buy the book, but it hasn't arrived. They haven't had time to read it, but they still write a review. So that's a non-verified customer. So a disclosure is required that some reviews are from non-verified users, and they may not fully represent a typical consumer's experience. You have to tell the reader of your advertisement, a website page, an ad, a video, that these reviews may not represent the typical results because they're from not verified users. And then we all know that nobody does this, right? Nobody ever does this. There are entirely made up or AI generated reviews and testimonials, completely fabricated. You need to avoid this. And in full disclosure to you, you should never, ever do this.
I'm actually just talking to a client now about this because, or somebody I'm talking to actually from the group that wants to do it because they don't have enough, they don't have any reviews on their products, but they've been around and they do, you know, 300, 400,000 a year, but people don't actually leave reviews. So
they absolutely put their entire business at risk.
But how does the FTC prove that? Okay, let's say I generate 500 reviews. And obviously I'm not stupid and I don't roll 500 out the next day you come and there's 500 stars, mm-hmm. right? I roll out 2 a day, 3 a day mm-hmm. over the course of whatever time frame.
Right.
I even put a verified logo that I create and it says verified. It's got a little check mark.
Okay, so let's go through this step by step.
How would the FTC even they get complaints and say, "Well, there's no way that these reviews are real." I mean, are they going to reach out to me for a brand that's doing little volume and say, "Hey, we got a report." Obviously not one person complaining, but there has to be some other things I feel like that they, before they really are going to dive in and do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I hear you. And what I'm saying is, I say this every time and I'll say this probably on every session. This coming weekend, how many people are going to drive drunk on Friday night over the legal limit? Millions. Are they all going to get caught and get a ticket, get their car impounded? No. Are they all going to cause an accident and kill three people? No. Some might. The great majority, 99.9%, won't. They get away with it. As a member of the AdLeaks Board of Advisors and as a marketer with integrity, I'm telling you, you shouldn't do it, right? But if you did, the FTC could, if there was a complaint about your product, or somebody bought your product and got sick, had side effects, complained, they could look at it. They could look at the website. And they could see all these amazing reviews, right? And these amazing reviews aren't compliant because they're made up. The FTC can ask you to show them the actual email that the consumer used to send you that review. Or the actual submission form that you captured when the consumer gave that review. And they can ask you for the consumer's name, phone number, email address, whatever it is. What product did they buy? When did they buy it? So if you're really prepared to back it up, you know, rolling the dice is a business decision, right, Justin? It's a risk-reward ratio.
I'm not saying to do it. I know how if somebody was going to do it, and I'm not going to say on this podcast, I mean, I know how I would do it. That would prevent as much little risk as possible based off what you just told me.
Of course. I mean, I know how to go rob a gas station. That doesn't mean I'm going to teach you how to do it. anyway, don't make it up.
Okay, let's talk after this.
There are some special cases as well. So when it comes to health products, whether it's a supplement, a knee brace, a toothbrush, whatever it is, anything related to health, eye drops, doctor recommended or anything similar, dentist recommended, whatever, right? The FTC requires that before you use doctor recommended or any similar phrase, the brand, you can't rely on an outside party, you must have conducted a survey of a statistically significant number of doctors who practice in that specialty, who have confirmed affirmatively that they do recommend the product. Small companies don't have the resources to do that. So if you say doctor recommended for, let's say, eye drops that you're selling, and you haven't surveyed all the ophthalmologists and optometrists in the country, and a majority of them or a statistically significant sample hasn't responded, yes, we recommend this product, you can't use doctor recommended. That's a major violation. Why is this a major violation? It's a major violation because doctors are supposed to be very trustable, right? You're putting your health, your life in their hands. So if a product says doctor recommended, the FTC wants to know that you are really, really, really recommended by doctors. Has to be clear and has to be honest. Okay, so you can't overstate the level or the extent of the support from medical professionals. So let's suppose you have one or two doctors, and these doctors, I'm going to give you several cases. You have one or two doctors that you're friendly with, and you've reached out and you said, hey, Dr. Brenner, would you review this product for me, please? And you're not paying them. And they give a review and they say, wow, this is amazing. You don't need to disclose anything. You can say, as recommended by Dr. Brenner, MD, PhD, ABC, XYZ. If, however, the doctor is compensated in any way, equity in the company, revenue share on sales, then it must be disclosed just like you would disclose any other material connection to an influencer who wasn't a doctor. If you pay for it, you have to tell consumers it's being paid for. And you need to disclose it right there. So I got a picture of Dr. Brenner. It says Dr. Justin Brenner, ABC, XYZ, QR, whatever. And it says, I love these products. I think they're really super quality. And then it says underneath a disclaimer, Dr. Brenner is a medical director of our company. Okay, well, I'm assuming he's getting compensated then. You have to disclose appropriately. So you have to be specific, right? In your disclosure and in the recommendation that the doctor states. So if a doctor is giving you a recommendation, approval, I recommend this product, and you're not violating by saying doctor recommended, the recommendation has to apply specifically to the product that the doctor is recommending or vouching for. So if a product is recommended by dentists for being effective in reducing plaque, the advertising, the statement from the doctor has to specify that he's talking about your plaque reduction mouthwash, not all your other products. You can't give the consumer a misleading interpretation that a recommendation about one product should be halo associated broadly to all the rest of your products. That doesn't work. Competitors' names. This is a big topic. We've gone back and forth on this a number of times in the AdLeaks groups. Can you compare your product to a competitor and use their brand name? And the short answer is yes, provided that you are truthful and you can substantiate what you are saying. Your statement must be fair and based on like for like attributes. So if you're saying that your laptop screen is brighter than my laptop screen, that's fine. But if you say your laptop is better because your screen is brighter and mine has a smaller screen, that's not acceptable. So it can't be deceptive or misleading, right? Go back to the very beginning of this. No deceptive advertising, no misleading impressions. So you can't create confusion or the likelihood of confusion. And the comparison must be relevant. So what are the data points that a consumer would need to make a buying decision? So on a laptop, maybe it's battery life, weight, screen size, screen brightness, texture of keyboard. Maybe there's 20, 30 factors that I might consider in buying a laptop. Do I really care if there's 18 inches of wire inside on the motherboard or 17 inches? No, it's not relevant to my buying decision. So comparisons that throw in a whole bunch of other points that sound really cool, but have no relevance to the buying decision. They're just there for extra weight, more green check marks. That's not legal. Fair use applies here. So you may use a competitor's brand name only in a fully factual, non-deceptive context that in no way disparages the competitor company or their product, and that you can validate is completely truthful. Truth is a perfect defense against libel, against slander. It's not, unfortunately, always a perfect defense against a trademark violation. So when you see one company, Company A, quoting or referring to Company B in their content, there will usually be a disclosure that says other brand names and trademarks are the property of their respective owners. Give them credit. Especially if you use a competitor's name in web content or on a PDP, you have to go out of your way to make sure it's purely informational and purely fact-based. So, if you're going to just do a talking comparison in a piece of copy, compared to brand X, our product offers 10% more efficiency in energy use. So you're being specific, you're not disparaging them, but you need to be able to prove it's 10% more efficient. How do you prove it? Industry standard tests is the only thing that FTC will accept as valid proof. Say you're doing a comparison chart. Our product, products B, C, D, etc., check marks and X's, you've seen those. On the top of the chart says, look at how our features stack up against brand Y or brand Y, Z, and X in the latest market analysis. That's perfectly fair. As long as the comparisons are factual, relevant to making a buying decision, and you can validate them. Check out how we compare it to brand A. More features at a better price. That's cool. In this video, we're going to compare our cleaning power to brand B to show you the difference. While brand C offers similar service, we think our solution may be a better one for your specific needs. And before we close out, I'm going to remind and ask you all to remember that there are certain things that are going to carry through everything we talk about regarding FTC compliance. The first one is, it's all advertising. Please don't forget it. Meaning, everything you do is considered advertising by the FTC. An ad, certainly. A blog article, advertising. Website content, advertising. A description on your PDP pages, advertising. Consumer reviews, advertising. Use of a third-party citation, advertising. Social media posts, advertising, even if it's organic. UGC, reviews, testimonials, affiliate, it's all under the umbrella of advertising. So what's the implication? Well, who does advertising? A brand does advertising, but who's involved? An ad agency? A media company? Everybody, every party in the entire chain, from the brand owner who made the product to the placement agency that placed the ad, everybody shares liability. You cannot say if you're an agency, oh, the client gave it to me this way. It's not a get out of jail free. You are liable and responsible if you create or post anything that violates FTC. Let's say you create the ads. And the client signed off on them. I approve. You're still liable. The client's liable. You're liable. Every party in the chain has shared liability. So remember those two things and you'll stay safe. So next time, we're going to do something called the hot seat. We would like to ask a few of you brave souls to allow us to review some of your ads or some of your content or some of your UGC or testimonials, whatever, or reviews live on one of these sessions next week, where we'll go through it and we'll talk about it and we'll discuss it. And we won't embarrass you, but we'll guide you and help you make sure it's compliant if it isn't, or make sure that it's as compliant as it could possibly be. Please, please reach out to Justin, justin@adleaks.com, or contact him if you know him, or hit him up in the group and say, I'd love to be on the hot seat. I'd love my product to be reviewed. Wink, wink, get some great exposure. And with that, I'm going to say thank you very much for letting me bore you to tears with this session 3.
All good. I appreciate it, Marty. If you guys have any questions, feel free to reach out. I'll do a post this afternoon for just letting people know about the hot seat too, so everybody that doesn't get it. So sound good. I appreciate it. Thank you guys for your time.
Pleasure. Thanks so much.
See ya.